Welcome back to the Deep Dive, everybody. Today, we're going to take a deep dive into a really important environmental law case. Burlington, Northern, and Santa Fe Railway County, United States.
Oh, yeah, this one's a biggie.
Huge. If you're a law student struggling to get a grasp on CERCLA and just how messy figuring out who pays for cleaning up these contaminated sites can be, well, this deep dive is made for you.
Absolutely.
We're going to really break down how this 2009 Supreme Court decision kind of reshaped how we look at something called a ranger liability and this whole concept of splitting up the responsibility for environmental damage.
It really did, yeah.
So let's start by giving everyone a little background on this case. We're dealing with a chemical distribution facility in California. It was operated by a company called Brown & Bryant.
Or B&B.
B&B, right. They were in business for quite a while.
A long time, like decades, from the 60s to 1989.
Oh, wow. Okay, so almost 30 years.
Yep.
And a pretty important detail here is that a small chunk of the land they were using, a little less than an acre.
About 0.9 acres.
Right, was actually leased from, you guessed it, Burlington Northern and Santa Fe Railway.
The railroads.
The railroads. Mm. And the real troublemakers here, the substances causing all the problems, were mostly pesticides.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those were supplied by Shell Oil Company.
Exactly. Some pretty notorious chemicals in the mix.
Oh, really? Like what?
Well, things like DD and Nimagon.
Okay, so I'm guessing things didn't exactly go smoothly at this facility.
Not quite.
What happened?
Over the years, you know, with all those pesticides being handled and moved around, there were leaks, spills, you name it.
So contamination.
Big time. The soil, the groundwater, you name it. It was pretty bad.
So what happened? Did B&B end up cleaning it all up?
Well, here's the thing. B&B went bankrupt.
Oh, okay. So who was stuck with the cleanup bill?
The EPA and California's environmental agency stepped in to deal with the mess.
I bet that wasn't cheap.
Not at all. It ended up costing them over $8 million to clean up the site.
$8 million. Wow. So B&B goes bankrupt, leaves behind a huge mess, and the government's left holding the bag. What happened next?
Well, naturally, the EPA starts looking around for someone to hold responsible.
Right.
And they set their sights on Shell.
Makes sense. They supplied the pesticides.
Exactly. And the railroads, too, since they owned a portion of the contaminated land.
Right. And this all led to some pretty big legal questions that eventually went all the way to the Supreme Court, right?
Exactly.
So what were the big issues the court had to grapple with?
Well, the first one was, could Shell actually be held liable under CERCLA just because they sold the pesticides to B&B?
I mean, accidents happen, right?
Sure, sure. But the question is, does just knowing that spills might occur during, you know, handling and transferring these products, does that really mean Shell was arranging for disposal in the eyes of the law?
Okay, so that's the first big question. Arranger liability.
Yeah.
What's the second major issue?
The second one was all about the money. Could the cleanup costs be split between Shell and the railroads? Or would they be held responsible for the entire cost together?
So apportioning the cost versus joint and several liability.
You got it.
Let's start with that arranger liability question. What did the Supreme Court end up deciding about Shell's role in all of this?
Well, the Supreme Court ended up siding with Shell.
They did?
Yeah. They focused on how the phrase arrange for disposal was worded in the law.
Okay.
And they said that to be considered an arranger, you have to actually intend to dispose of a hazardous substance.
So it's not enough to know that spills could happen. You have to want them to happen.
Basically, yeah. They said that Shell's main business was selling pesticides, and that's a legitimate business.
Right. Pesticides are important for agriculture.
Exactly. And while spills did happen, they saw those as accidental, not something Shell intended.
So even though Shell knew B&B was handling dangerous stuff and that accidents are, well, part of life, that wasn't enough to pin the arranger label on them.
Nope. The court drew a hard line. Selling a useful product, even if spills happen sometimes, is not the same as intentionally getting rid of hazardous waste.
Okay, I get it. But I remember reading that Justice Ginsburg had a very different take on this.
Oh, yeah. Justice Ginsburg, she wrote a pretty strong dissent.
What did she disagree with?
She thought the majority's interpretation of arrange for disposal was way too narrow.
Interesting. What was her reasoning?
Well, she pointed out that Shell had a lot of control over how the pesticides were delivered.
Hmm. How so?
they dictated the kind of equipment B&B had to use. And she argued that combined with their knowledge of B&B's history, they knew spills were practically inevitable.
So in her view, Shell was basically setting things up for spills to happen.
Exactly. And she said that should have been enough to classify them as an arranger. She was looking at their control and knowledge of what was likely to happen, not just whether they specifically said, hey, let's go dispose of some hazardous waste.
It's amazing how the same set of facts can lead to such different interpretations. All right, let's move on to the second big issue, dividing up the liability. The district court had originally given Shell 6% of the responsibility and the railroads 9%, even though the railroads owned more of the contaminated land. What did the Supreme Court think about that?
So this part gets a little twisty.
Okay.
The Ninth Circuit, the appeals court, before it went to the Supreme Court, they had actually said, nope, joint and several liability, meaning everyone shares the whole cost.
Okay.
But the Supreme Court, they reversed that.
They did.
Mm-hmm. They sided with the district court and said, yeah, splitting up the costs is okay in this case.
Wow. So they overruled the Ninth Circuit.
Yeah. They basically reaffirmed that if you can divide up the environmental harm and you have a good reason for doing so, then you can divvy up the liability under CERCLA.
So in this case, what made the harm divisible?
Well, if you can trace specific pollution to a specific party.
Oh, I see.
Then it's considered divisible. Like, if we know this contaminant came from this party over here.
And we can separate out their portion of the mess, so to speak.
Right. And the courts have to have a reasonable basis for making those connections.
Makes sense. So how do they justify holding the railroads responsible for only 9% of the cleanup cost when they own 19% of the land?
It's a little tricky, but basically the courts looked beyond just how much land they owned.
What else did they consider?
Well, for one thing, they looked at how long B&B had been polluting the site.
Oh, right. They were there for decades.
Exactly. And B&B was already operating on the original part of the land, the 3.8 acres, for quite a while before they even leased that extra 0.9 acres from the railroads.
So a lot of the pollution probably happened before the railroads were even involved.
Likely, yeah. And then they also looked at what specific chemicals were found where.
Okay.
And it turned out some of those chemicals didn't even need to be cleaned up.
Oh, interesting.
They also took into account the main area of contamination, like the heart of the problem. And it turned out most of it was outside the railroad's land.
So based on all of that, they basically said, okay, the pollution on the railroad's land, it only contributed a small amount to the overall problem.
Right. Less than 10%.
Yeah.
And so that 9% figure, they said it was within a reasonable margin of error.
A margin of error. How big are we talking?
Get this, they actually acknowledged a 50% margin of error in their estimates.
Whoa, 50%. That's a pretty wide range, especially when we're talking about millions of dollars.
It is. It really shows how complex these cases can get.
Yeah. It sounds like the court was really trying to make a direct connection between what each party did or owned and the actual environmental harm. It wasn't just a blanket judgment.
Exactly. They said that even if splitting up the responsibility isn't perfect, and it rarely is in these environmental cases, as long as there's a solid reason for how they divided it up, it's okay.
So this ruling made it a little easier to argue for splitting up the harm in these kinds of cases.
Yeah, it gave the courts more options to consider, like the timing of the pollution, the location, the types of contaminants. It's not just about who owns what land anymore.
But I'm guessing Justice Ginsburg had some thoughts about this, too.
Oh, she did. She wasn't completely on board with this part either.
What were her concerns?
Well, she had concerns about both how they went about it and the substance of the decision.
Okay, break those down for me.
Procedurally, she was worried that the district court jumped into apportioning liability without giving both sides a real chance to present their arguments and evidence about it.
So she felt like the process was rushed.
Kinda, yeah. She pointed out that CERCLA usually defaults to joint and several liability. You know, everyone pays together to make sure the cleanup gets done.
Right.
And she said if a court's going to deviate from that, they need to have strong arguments and evidence specifically focused on why the harm should be split up.
Makes sense. What about her substantive concerns?
Well, as we talked about earlier, she thought Shell was a major player in all of this because of their control over the pesticides. And she questioned whether the percentages the district court came up with were fair or really based on enough evidence.
Okay, so just to recap, the two big takeaways from this Burlington Northern case seem to be, first, that to prove arranger liability, you need to show that someone actually intended to dispose of a hazardous substance. and second, that the courts are more open to dividing up the cleanup costs if there's a good reason for doing so.
Exactly.
So regarding arranger liability, the Supreme Court really emphasized that intent to dispose. That's a game changer.
It is. Selling a product, even if spills might happen, doesn't automatically make you an arranger in the eyes of CERCLA. The court even said, and I'm quoting here, under the plain language of the statute, an entity may qualify as an arranger under 6F07A3 when it takes intentional steps to dispose of a hazardous substance.
Okay, so that quote, that's basically the legal test now.
Pretty much, yeah. It definitely limits who can be held liable as an arranger. It could protect a lot of businesses from being on the hook for cleanup costs caused by how their customers use their products. Unless, of course, there's proof that they intended for those spills to happen.
And what about the apportionment side of things? What's the main takeaway there?
I think the biggest point is that the courts now have more flexibility to divvy up the responsibility for environmental cleanup costs.
Even if the calculations aren't perfectly accurate.
Right. As long as there's a reasonable basis for how they divided it up, so they can look at more than just who owns the land.
It makes things more complicated, but probably also more fair in some situations.
Definitely. Especially in cases where you have multiple sources of contamination or when the pollution has built up over a long period.
But like Justice Ginsburg pointed out, there are concerns about fairness too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Especially when you're dealing with cases where the main polluter can't pay, like B&B in this case.
So who ends up footing the bill?
Well, it could end up falling on the government or other parties who might be considered responsible, even if they can't really divide up their share of the harm any further.
Right. It seems like Burlington Northern, even though it was a controversial decision, tried to find a balance between making sure polluters are held accountable and being fair when things are really complicated.
Yeah, it's a tough balance to strike.
So for all our listeners out there who are planning on going into environmental law, what are some of the key practical impacts of this ruling that they should keep in mind?
Well, first off, this whole idea of intent to dispose, it's a big deal. It means that companies that sell products that could cause contamination might not be automatically liable for cleanup costs, at least not unless there's evidence they wanted those spills to happen.
Right.
And the fact that courts are more willing to apportion costs, that's a big change too. It gives everyone more options when it comes to figuring out who pays for cleanup. But it also means that in some cases, the government might end up shouldering more of the burden.
Especially when the main polluter goes bankrupt.
Exactly.
So Burlington Northern, it's a really important case to understand if you're dealing with CERCLA and environmental cleanup.
Absolutely. It gives us a framework for interpreting some key parts of the law. And it shows just how complex these environmental cleanup efforts can be.
We've covered a lot of ground today. This has been a really fascinating deep dive into a really important case. So to all you future environmental law experts out there, here's something to think about. Given how the Supreme Court emphasized intent when it comes to arranger liability and how they're more flexible about splitting up the costs, how do you think legal strategies will change in future CERCLA cases?
Yeah, good question. Especially when you have those really complicated supply chains and pollution that's been happening for years and years.
Exactly. And what kind of impact will all this have on society as a whole?
Yeah.
You know, as the responsibility for paying for environmental cleanup shifts around. It's definitely something to consider as you start your legal careers. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive, everyone. We'll see you next time.